Life Management Science Labs would like to acknowledge that we live and produce this podcast on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. We'd also like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the lands of our listeners and our international colleagues. We'd like to pay our respects to their elders, past, present, and emerging. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Work in Progress, the Personal Productivity Science Insights podcast produced by LMSL, the Life Management Science Labs. We are champions of life management science, providing structured insights informed by science and inspired by practice on key aspects of conscious living. Each week, we bring you scientific and practical insights on each element with the expert knowledge of professionals in the field. I am your host, Joanna. Let's get started. Hey everyone, I'm your host, Joanna, and you're tuning into the Work in Progress podcast, which is our personal productivity podcast. So on today's episode, we are going to be talking about sleep, but more specifically, how we can better understand sleep quality and how it contributes to better productivity. So I'm happy to say I'll be joined by our guest, Nicola Can, to help dissect today's topic and delve into some helpful sleep hacks as well. Nicola is a sleep psychologist and works regularly with organizations to help promote better sleep. She has also worked repeatedly with families whose existing challenges were made harder due to poor sleep. And on top of that, she's also the founder of the Family Sleep Consultant she created because she's passionate about improving people's sleep and raising awareness of the importance of sleep for children's development. Hi, Nicola. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Hi, Joanna. Good to be here.
Yeah, amazing. Before we get started, I'd love if you could tell us a bit more about who you are and what it is you do.
Yeah, no problem. Well, I'm a psychologist and have been doing that for quite some time. I trained as an educational psychologist back in the UK some time back. And I was working with lots of families who were struggling with sleep. I was being invited to help them with other issues that they were struggling with, but no one was addressing the sleep. And after some time seeing this over and over again, I realized that there was a bit of a gap here for a lot of those families. So that's what one of the things that got me very interested in sleep. And after kind of many more years of training and starting to specialize in that area, I set up my own business so that's what I now do full time. And I love it. I'm very passionate about it. I have a lot to say about sleep.
Amazing. Well, I'm sure we'll get to get into all of that the further we get into today's topic. But I know that you love to travel and you love exploring new cultures. And before we had a chat about like where you're from, and you're from so many different places. Could you tell us a bit more about that?
Yeah, I am from lots of places. Today I'm in Wellington, New Zealand, and it's a glorious sunny day and I'm very happy to be here. New Zealand is the place I call home, but because my business is online, I work with people internationally and I work with a lot of people in Asia, Australia, New Zealand, the UK. So actually that allows me to travel full time. So I've lived in lots of places and I'm partly nomadic, which, travel is a huge passion for me. And being able to build a business that's based on something I'm also passionate about that allows me to keep traveling as well, is something that I really love about my life right now.
Amazing. I think that sounds like a lot of people's dream that you're living at the moment. So that's really cool. Can you tell me a bit more about your organization that you founded? Can you tell me how it came about, what inspired it?
I actually struggled with my own sleep for a long time, really through my childhood and teenage years, early adulthood. I didn't really get any good advice. A lot of the generic stuff that you'll find online is just not that applicable when you have chronic sleep problems. So I had lots of people who wanted to give advice and help, but none of it really helped. And then when I trained as a psychologist and I kept finding more people who were struggling with sleep, I started to become very interested in sleep and learn more about the psychology of it and realize that there are so many things we can do to improve our sleep. And as someone who has had lots of sleepless nights, I have a lot of empathy for the people that I work with. And I know what that feels like. I know when you've been awake all night, you're going into work the next day, and how hard that is just to do anything, really, just to function as a human being. So I'm really passionate about helping people fix sleep when it's problematic for them, but also maximizing their sleep so that they can maximize other aspects of their life. I'm a very active person, and one of the reasons I'm able to be really active is because I sleep well and I prioritize sleep. So when you approached me with this topic, I was really interested to come and talk about it. As a psychologist, you're often being asked to fix problems, and actually it would be great if we didn't get to that point with sleep, if we were all prioritizing sleep and we weren't letting it become a problem. So having these conversations about being more proactive about sleep rather than looking at fixing something that's already broken is a great thing to be doing as a psychologist.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you so much for sharing that with us. And before we dive more into that, we've got a section we've called Have You Met Nicola? So here we just get to know you a bit more. And I've based some of these questions on the fact that you love to travel and you love culture. So hopefully we can get to know more about that too. But my first question for you is, do you have a favorite book or anything that you're reading at the moment?
That one is so hard for me. I read a lot of books, and some of them are about sleep, but a lot I read very, very eclectic tastes when it comes to books. So I thought long and hard about this one. But I am going to recommend a sleep book because this is one that was really impactful for me. It's called Lifetime, and it's by Russell Foster. And it's about, I think usually when people are thinking about sleep, we're thinking about what time should I go to bed? How many hours of sleep should I have? And kind of looking at a set of rules that we need to try and implement. But this book, Lifetime, is all about something called chronobiology, which is a fairly recent area of research. And it's really about how our circadian timings and rhythms apply to so many aspects of our life. Sleep is a major one of those, but also things like the timing of when we eat and when we sleep, what time we take medications. There's so many things that are related to our circadian rhythm. And I think this is something to keep an eye on. If you're interested in this area at all, then start with this book and start delving into some of that research. The book is great because it showcases some really interesting pieces of research, but it's also very readable. So it tells some really interesting stories as well, and kind of has the human factor as well. So yeah. Go read that one. And if you enjoy it, message me about it, because I'd love to talk to you about it.
Amazing. Because I feel like when we, think about sleep and we want to find out more information, we often just go to like a quick Google search and it tells us to get like 7 to 8 hours of sleep, and we think that's it, and we just kind of stick with that, and sometimes it doesn't work, and then we're like, why are we not having better sleep? But I love books about specific aspects of our lives because I feel like it can just be so informational. So thank you for recommending that one.
No problem.
Perfect. So my next one for you is movies. Do you have a favorite movie or anything that you've recently watched that you love?
Yeah, again, I'm not a fan of favorites, because I think my favorite would change all of the time depending on my mood and what I've recently watched. But a movie that stuck with me that I saw recently that I think probably all of your listeners have seen is Barbie. I don't know if you have seen it, Joanna.
Yeah.
But what an interesting movie, and what a cultural phenomenon that began. I was in Singapore, which is somewhere I spend quite a lot of time. I was in Singapore when I watched Barbie, and Singapore is it's quite a traditional, has a lot of quite traditional aspects to its culture and to gender roles. So it was really interesting place to be watching that movie and to be part of the conversations that were going on about how it represented feminism and what is the patriarchy, and to go to the cinema and see parents taking their young children and starting to ask all these difficult questions. So I mean, I loved it for the silliness as well. I do enjoy a silly movie, all the dance numbers and the singing and the bright colors. But I thought it was really interesting to just see how that was received in Singapore and around the world.
Yeah, for sure. I remember growing up with like the traditional Barbie movies, and I didn't really know what to expect going into this one, but it was so interesting and definitely not what I was expecting at all. But like, as you said, seeing the conversations that arose from it was very surprising. And I think it was definitely a really transformational movie. So Definitely. Perfect. Well, my next one for you is, do you have a favorite place that you like to travel to?
Oh, that's hard as well. Again, favourites. So it depends when you ask me. I might say Wellington today, actually, because I've been away for a long time and I got back a few weeks ago. I'm going to be here for quite a while. And I'm just settling in. And this is where a lot of the people that I love in the world are. And there's like the weather here is pretty awful most of the time. But today it's glorious. I have been at the beach. I've been swimming in the sea. Which is, you don't get to do, you have to take those chances when they come in Wellington. I love this. I love New Zealand. I love Kiwi culture, how friendly and laid back everyone here is. And I'm at the start of the visit. So I'm really looking forward to the summer ahead and lots of music festivals and all sorts of fun stuff. There's always lots of gigs in Wellington. So yeah, right now, if you asked me 6 months from now when winter's coming, it would not be Wellington, but today as well.
Yeah, I can see the sun on you, which looks absolutely lovely.
I got a little bit of sun, but then I was at the beach for too long at lunchtime.
No, I feel like that's always a good thing. Wellington looks so beautiful in New Zealand in general. I've never been, but I've seen the photos and like the mountains and the remarkables, like definitely a mountain I really want to go to. But it looks such a picturesque place as well.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place, and I think although there's certainly work for me to do here around sleep, people here have good work-life balance, and they tend to look after themselves more than some of the other places I do a lot of work, like Singapore, where they work hard out all the time and they don't really prioritize rest. So the people here are doing a lot of things right, I think.
Yeah, well, that's super interesting, actually. I never really thought to think of it like that, but that's so great you're enjoying where you are. But yeah, awesome. Let's move on to my next one, which I'm going to veer away from favorites. So I'm just going to ask you, what culture do you enjoy learning about, if you could pick one?
Wow, okay. Ooh, all of them. Fine culture, fascinating. And there's so much to learn, isn't there?
Yeah.
Maybe I'll just draw on some recent experience. I had a wonderful trip recently to Vietnam, and I've lived in Asia, so I had spent time in Vietnam before, but I was there for weeks. So I really got to just kind of bed myself in and get to know Vietnam better than I have before. I write for a travel blog as well, and I wrote an article for the travel blog while I was there. It's called The Travel Psychologist, so if anyone's interested in psychology of travel, go and check that out. And I drew some inspiration for my latest piece from my time in Vietnam, because there were so many things that feel confronting for me about being in Vietnam. The incredibly busy and chaotic streets, just crossing the road is hard if you haven't practiced it. When I first set foot in Ho Chi Minh, it felt like absolute chaos, but in quite an exciting way. And then they've got such an interesting and rich cultural history and loads of historical stuff that you can go and experience. And being there long enough to talk to people about how they find being Vietnamese and living in Vietnam, you get such a different sense of a place when you really talk to local people about it. So getting different people's perspectives on what does it mean to be Vietnamese? It's just a fascinating country. The people are so friendly and quite different culturally to me. And I think that's something I search for. I'm interested in people who are different to me because I can learn so much from them. So it was an amazing trip. Loads of interesting experiences. Go to Vietnam, everyone. It's wonderful.
Yeah, no, that sounds really cool. I've never been to Vietnam, but it looks beautiful. But I can definitely give you some
recommendations.
I would love that. I'm actually going to Thailand next year, if that's somewhere you've been.
Not for ages, actually. No, I haven't. Okay. Which bit of Thailand are you going to?
I'm going to Phuket, if that's how you say it right.
Yeah. Oh, classic. Yeah, that will be lovely. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, Vietnam for sure. I feel like I definitely need some travel advice and you would be the perfect person for that. Awesome. Well, I've got one last question for you, which is if you could pick one place to travel to next, where would that be that you haven't been to before?
That I haven't been to. I've got to say Costa Rica. And there is a little bit of a story behind that. When I first became a nomad and set off on my travels, Costa Rica was the destination I had in mind. That was 2 years ago, and I still haven't been. And now my friends mock me about this because every time I plan another trip, they say to me, but when are you going to Costa Rica? Because that was the dream. Costa Rica represented my nomadic lifestyle, and it became a bit of a running joke. When I was going to start traveling full time, I'm going to Costa Rica. It kind of represented being nomadic to me. And yes, I still haven't made it. So I've got plans to go to Costa Rica probably in 2025 now, but try and coordinate with some friends from other parts of the world as well. So when I do get there, I think it's going to be an amazing trip and we'll probably want to stay for quite some time.
Yeah. Well, it seems like it'll be very revolutionary for you since it's been years now since you've been wanting to go. So I hope it lives up to your expectations and I'm sure it will. It looks like a beautiful place. Perfect. Well, I think we can jump right into our interview questions now. So my first one for you is, what does sleep quality mean to you in your personal definition?
There's lots of different ways you can look at it, really. But in terms of how it should look and how it should feel, there are some quite simple things that you can consider. So quantity is part of that. It's the thing I get asked about the most is actually how much sleep do I need? But that's really just one factor in getting quality sleep. You do need to make sure you're getting as much sleep as you need individually. But it's also about how you feel. Are you feeling tired? If you're tired, something's wrong. You might be getting 9 hours of sleep and still waking up tired. There's something wrong with the quality of your sleep then. So are you waking up feeling refreshed is something to consider. And the other key one really is consistency. As I mentioned before about the chronobiology, we're learning so much more about the importance of our biological patterns and trying to be as aligned to them as possible. And sleep is a massive part of that. So getting your sleep to be as consistent as possible in terms of the duration and the timings throughout the week, but also on a longer term basis, that is going to lead to good quality sleep. If you're sleeping at different times throughout the week, then you can sleep for as long as you like, but it's not going to be good quality. So you're actually not going to be functioning at your best and you're not going to be waking up feeling really refreshed and ready for the day. So consistency is something I bang on about a lot.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting because I always thought that if you get that sort of 8 kind of hours of sleep, that's all you need. And if you're still waking up tired, then you need more sleep or something like that. So could you talk to us about that a bit more?
Yeah, it's a really common misconception. And it leads to people beating themselves up about sleep, which actually makes it harder to sleep well. If you're worrying about sleep, you're less likely to sleep well. But we see there's so much information online telling us that we need 8 hours. Usually 8 hours of sleep is what you'll hear. But it's more like shoe sizes. I'm actually pretty average. I'm a UK 6 shoe size, so I. But if someone started telling me that I should be wearing a size 7 shoe because that's what everyone should be wearing, well, that's just, it's nonsense. And sleep's kind of like that. We have our individual settings for it. And I'm a short sleeper, I really need 6 to 7 hours of sleep. But if I'm always trying to get 8 hours and feeling like I'm underslept, then actually that my subjective sleep quality is much worse. And I will feel tireder because I believe I'm not getting enough sleep. And I will work hard to try and get more sleep than I actually need. So it sets up a lot of really unhelpful psychological expectations that can lead into maintaining sleep problems or creating insomnia Insomnia is really about how much you worry about sleep. So when you're trying to, when you've got these unhelpful goals that don't actually match what you need as an individual, that sets you on a really unhelpful path when it comes to sleep. So duration is really important, but you need to know how much sleep you need as an individual and work towards that.
Yeah. So for example, if someone's testing out, you know, 7 hours of sleep and they're waking up and they're still feeling really tired, what would you recommend they do as like a next step to try and increase the quality of their sleep?
There's so many things you can do. This is the wonderful thing about sleep. I like to view it as a ripple effect. I tend to recommend that people pick a couple of things that they can do that they can do consistently over time. So what can you change about your daily habits that you can keep doing that is easy for you to do, because it will have some positive impact on your sleep, and then it will all start to get a bit easier. And then you can build from that. There's no point in, I see a lot of people who say have completely quit coffee, but they love coffee. So now they feel resentful towards their sleep because it's stopping them from having coffee as well as keeping them awake at night. And actually, coffee, like all sleep things, it's variable in terms of how much influence that has on individual sleep. Some people are more tolerant to caffeine than others. So you kind of need to play around with all the different strategies that that are available. The generic sleep hygiene advice online is all based on some kind of evidence, but people tend to try and apply it too rigidly, as though the same thing will work for everyone. So things like trying to exercise regularly, eat at the same times, don't eat big meals just before bed, minimize your device use before bedtime. All of these are helpful strategies, but also you don't need to do all of them all the time. Find the things that are going to be the most impactful for you and try not to feel bad about it. You know, I'm the sleep expert, and I sometimes am scrolling at 3 a.m. on Facebook, and I don't feel bad about that because I sleep well most of the time. Yeah. So you've got to not let those strategies feed into all this kind of negative thinking that people can have around their sleep. There's on my website's resources page, there's a document, a PDF on there that people can download if they're interested in looking at the quality of their sleep. It's called the Sleep Sheet, and it's just an amalgamation of all the most evidence-based simple strategies that people can implement. And people would see from that rather than it being a really prescriptive list, it's more guidelines, and it's more a case of tick which ones you want to try rather than do these 16 things and then you will sleep well. So applying some flexibility and cutting yourself some slack to the kind of the generic advice is the best thing to start with. If you're doing a lot of those things and you're still struggling, that's when you need to ask for more specialized help.
Yeah, and just in terms of like picking like a couple things maybe that you could try, what's your advice for people in terms of sticking to that and remaining accountable for doing that? Because I know, for example, personally, it's so easy to get into bed, have my phone in front of me and just like fall asleep while scrolling on my phone. Like I know I shouldn't be doing that, but like it's much easier than picking a book to read for like 20 minutes instead of being on my phone.
Yeah. Are you asking about specific phone advice or just trying to change sleep habits in general?
Just trying to, you know, remain accountable for those, you know, better habits that you're trying to pick up. For example, reading over being on your phone.
Okay. Yeah, this kind of goes beyond sleep advice as well, and just advice I would give as a psychologist before I started specializing in sleep as well, that behavior change is hard. So don't expect to be able to decide you're going to change something and then it just to happen. And don't feel bad if you have to work at it. A lot of people think that it should be easy, but actually our habits become very embedded. So shifting those can be tricky. So my advice is always to pick something that feels achievable, that you feel like is going to have quite a good impact, something you can maintain. Because as soon as you start slipping with that habit, you can fall into that thinking around, oh, what's the point in this? I'm giving up. I'll start next week. And actually, every tiny step in the right direction is helpful. So pick something that is going to be the easiest thing for you to stick to, and just acknowledge that you're making an effort there and you're doing something good for yourself. And the other thing I like to encourage people to do is have an accountability buddy. So if you share a house with other people, partners, children, whoever, housemates, they can be your accountability buddy. Tell them what you're going to do, or even just tell someone at work. When you say it out loud, you become more likely to follow through on it. Even if that person doesn't ever ask you about it again, there's something about articulating that plan to other people that makes you more likely to see it through. So tell people what you're doing. You're also being a good sleep role model there as well, because you're showing people that you want to get good sleep. You're prioritizing that. And I think more people need to hear that message.
Yeah, I feel like things are so much easier when you have someone else doing it with you, so you feel just like a little bit less alone in what you're trying to achieve. And for example, if you're both, you know, having a bit of a period of, you know, not being able to follow through on certain things, it's okay because you've got that other person as well. And just in terms of like examples of things we can do to help improve the quality of our sleep, what are some strategies that we can try maybe before bedtime?
Yeah, well, actually, I mean, there's some classic things you can do before bedtime, but I would broaden it out and say, don't focus too much on bedtime, because a lot of the good work you can do is during the day.
Okay.
And a lot of people focus on bedtime, but you've missed lots of opportunities already by that point. There are things you can do during the day which really set you up for a good night of sleep. So I try and encourage people to focus less on bedtime. In terms of bedtime, have a lovely bedtime routine. It doesn't need to be strict, rigid. It doesn't need to be like extremely scheduled, but trying to go to bed at roughly the same time, not beating yourself up about staying up late occasionally, but having a nice bedtime routine that you can look forward to. So whatever that means for you, I love reading. So it's the time of day when I really have some peace and quiet to read to myself. So I factor that into my pre-sleep time, so that I have a good half hour of reading, and that really helps to relax my mind and my body so that I'm ready for sleep. So whatever that thing is for you, build some things into that routine that help you to look forward to it. So going to bed doesn't feel like something you're resentful about, or you've not made the most of your day. You've actually got something to feel positive about there, something to look forward to. But as I said, the daytime stuff is actually often more important. So one of the key things to think about is people focus a lot on what time they go to bed, but what time you wake up in many ways is more important. One of the reasons for that is because we can't really control when we fall asleep. We can just set the scene and make our bedroom and our routines as conducive to sleep as possible. But we might still find ourselves awake 2 hours later and really struggling to get to sleep. It's much easier to control the time that you wake up, because you can set an alarm for that. So you can create more consistency usually around your wake up time than you can around your sleep time. The knock-on effect there is that the time you fall asleep will start to become more regular if the time you wake up is more regular. Because during the day, our sleep drive, our appetite for sleep builds. And the only thing that satisfies that appetite for sleep is more sleep. So if you wake up at the same time every day and let that sleep drive build throughout the day, you're going to be tired at the right time. Your body is naturally going to want to go to sleep. So you are creating exactly the right conditions to go to sleep at the time you want to go to sleep at. So thinking about what time you wake up and how many hours you need to be awake for to create enough sleep drive to get as much sleep as you need. So kind of flipping it on its head, really. So especially it's really helpful for people who have problematic sleep, especially because they worry about bedtime. They worry about getting to sleep. They get stressed out in the hours leading up to bedtime. They don't like getting into bed. So you're actually shifting the focus onto something that people have way more control over, and that is actually really impactful on their sleep anyway.
Yeah, definitely. And why do you think understanding and improving sleep quality is important for personal professional success?
So many reasons. I'm sure a lot of your listeners will have experienced a bad night of sleep, at least a bad night of sleep. Some of them maybe more. Everything falls apart. It's horrible. It feels hard to achieve anything. You just want to get through that day and get back to bed and it to be over. So there's so many challenges on an individual level. Just after one night of poor sleep, we are so much worse at problem solving, at behaving rationally, controlling our emotions. We're less sociable. We are slower to react to things. We make riskier decisions. There's a lot of interesting research on the impact of short sleep or poor sleep just on a day to day basis. But in the longer term, what that then leads to, if that's one day, then you get through it and your sleep will be back on track in no time. You don't really need to worry about it. Do what you can to get through that day. But if you're chronically sleep deprived or you're experiencing chronic poor sleep, these things start to accumulate. So if you imagine that on a day-to-day basis, you're struggling to control your emotions, you're a bit more emotionally volatile because of sleep deprivation, that's going to have an impact on your relationships at home and at work. If you're having trouble with, if you're slower to problem solve and you're more impulsive because you're chronically sleep deprived, you're going to be way less efficient at work. You're going to be less creative at work. There's really interesting research around the impact on employees and organizations where there's a lot of sleep deprivation that says we're more likely to behave in all sorts of interesting ways when we're chronically sleep deprived. One of them is that our moral compass goes a bit askew when we're tired. So people who are sleep deprived are more likely to engage in what the research calls deviant workplace behavior. And they're talking about things like stealing stationery or taking credit for someone else's work. And you might feel very strongly about that when you're well slept, but we become quite irrational when we're tired and we're more likely to engage in those kinds of behaviors. We're all also more likely to do things like cyber loafing, which is a term probably not a lot of people are familiar with, but cyber loafing is when you're pretending to work on the internet, but actually you're jumping around on social media sites or like checking out your next holiday. And it's really tempting to do that. You know, we just have to open that tab up. It's really easy. Our impulse control is decreased when we're sleep deprived. So we're way more likely to engage in cyber loafing. And there are really interesting experiments done around this to check which tabs people are looking at when they're at work and what percentage of time they're doing things. We do a lot more cyber loafing when we're tired. And then that has, of course, a longer term impact on your productivity as an employee. And then if lots of people are sleep deprived, that has a quite big impact on the organization as well. There's a lot of wasted time going on there.
Yeah, for sure. And it's really interesting that you bring up this idea of cyber loafing and like technology, because I feel like the creation of technology and all these different things we can do on our devices can really make us feel more tired and more drained. So how can we go about, you know, having a healthy relationship with technology so it doesn't impact the quality of our sleep?
Yeah, I struggle with this because most of my work is online because I work virtually and I'm traveling. So it's a really difficult one. One thing to note is that there will be people listening who probably don't have much control over this. And when it comes to work, a lot of the hours I spend online are working hours. And so I minimize that as much as is possible, but there's only a certain amount we can control that. So it's really about finding the bits that move for you. What can you do differently? And maybe that is having a conversation with your boss about when you get to take breaks or how long your days are. But on an individual level, there are things you can do to make that easier. It is true that blue light has a negative impact on your sleep. And so that's why you see this advice about not having screen time just before bed. The thing to be more mindful of, though, the thing that has a greater impact there is what you're doing online. If you're watching TV, that's a very passive activity. You're not engaging with it in any way. You're not responding to it in any way. If you're on your work emails, that has a huge impact compared to watching telly, because you're seeing, even if you're just reading them, you're seeing something that elicits a response in you. You're starting to think about the email you're going to compose tomorrow morning when you're officially at work, or you're thinking about the task that you've just been asked to do. So you're setting your brain into work mode there. So it's like creating some boundaries around that can be really helpful. Just to think about, well, some of us just enjoy screen time before bed. you don't have to feel terrible about that, but try not to be on emails, try not to be on social media, try and do something really passive. So that's creating some limits for yourself that are achievable and manageable is the way forward. When it comes to screens as well, I mean, there's a lot of issues around not just screens, but actually office lighting. It's really negatively impactful on your sleep. One of the biggest bits of advice I give people is to get natural daylight as much as you can. We just don't do that much anymore, and it's free. And it's one of the biggest things you can do to the best things you can do to improve your sleep. So just scheduling in breaks where you can go outdoors, or even just sitting near a window, that helps. Sitting in an office that's lit by LED lights all day is, and it's going to be bad for your sleep. And then you go home and you feel guilty that you're on Facebook in the evening. Well, you've been sitting in an office all day that's had this awful lighting. You've done a lot of the damage already. You're going to make it harder for yourself to sleep. You're going to be more likely to engage in those screen time behaviors just before bed because your defenses are already down. So thinking about screen use throughout the day, scheduling in those breaks where you can, getting natural light as much as early on in the day as possible, but throughout the day is also really helpful. They're my top tips really about screens.
Yeah, definitely. And I love how you said that you can look for more passive activities that you can do on your device as opposed to just being like completely cut out your device, because I feel like for some people that is a part of, you know, what they like doing, and having to cut that out completely could be unrealistic and something that they won't be able to maintain in the long term, which you also mentioned is important. So yeah, that's a really good mention as well.
Yeah, I see. I work with a lot of families where this comes up, you know, especially with teenagers. This is it's such a huge area of conflict within families. And I see parents who are feeling awful about the amount of screen time that their kids are getting. And so it leads to arguments before bedtime because they want to impose a curfew and the teenagers are not keen to do that. Can get really confrontational. Well, then the confrontation is what's keeping everyone awake because everyone's getting really stressed out about bedtime. And you know you're going to have that argument. So you anticipate getting stressed out before bed as well. So actually having really strict rules about this, if it's going to lead to confrontation, is probably doing more damage than good. So allowing some flexibility on that, I think, is really helpful for a lot of people.
Yeah, for sure. And I know we also have like supplements and things we can take that help induce better sleep, like melatonin, for example. Is that something that you recommend as being productive for quality sleep?
No, normally not. There's not loads of evidence behind most of the supplements that you'll see recommended. Melatonin is what they say. One of the main things that melatonin does is it helps to reset the timing of your sleep if you take it at the right time. So I actually see a lot of people who don't really understand that purpose, and so they're taking it at the wrong time. Melatonin is something that naturally occurs within our body, and our body produces it in a circadian pattern, so in a 24-hour cycle, and that is one of the things that drives our sleep. So our body is naturally producing melatonin, and if we're doing all the other stuff right, if we're getting daylight, if we're exercising regularly, if we're eating at roughly the same time every day, and if our sleep is at consistent times, our melatonin production will do what it needs to do. You don't need to take any supplements. This is why it's mostly used for jet lag, because you've taken your body out of its normal biological rhythm and placed it in a new time zone. And melatonin can help you get back into that rhythm because it's just giving your own melatonin rhythm a natural kickstart. It's never something that should be taken long-term. If you feel like you're needing to rely on melatonin, then firstly, there's other things you can do that are so much easier, like going out in the sunshine. But that suggests that you've actually got something more problematic going on. If you feel like you need melatonin to get to sleep, then there's something else that's problematic there that you probably need to try and fix. Because you can also become quite reliant on any kind of medications, but also there can be a psychological reliance on melatonin or supplements. So even if they're not prescription medication and don't have that addictive capacity, if you start feeling like I need this to get to sleep, that's a difficult road you're starting down. That's the way insomniacs talk. You can end up with a long schedule of things. I cannot possibly sleep unless my bedroom is like this and I have these supplements and I listen to this music. And what you're doing there is setting yourself up to fail because, well, no, you don't really need those long lists of requirements in order to get to sleep. You just need to build up your sleep drive effectively. But the more you feel like you need them, then the harder it is going to be to get to sleep without them. So you're creating a cycle there. And supplements can form part of that. In saying that, you know, if you really enjoy a relaxing cup of caffeine-free tea before bed, and that's part of a pleasant bedtime routine for you, then fantastic. But if it's if you feel like you're relying on something and you can't sleep without it, then it's problematic.
So it's important not to set super rigid sort of schedules and routines for yourself before bed, because if you don't have those, then you're unable to sleep.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a bit of a, there's a bit of a contradiction there. I'm always talking about how important consistency is with sleep, but it's got to be not rigid consistency with some flexibility. Otherwise, exactly what you say, Joanna, you're starting to focus way too much on the details. And if you talk to anyone who sleeps well, they don't think about this stuff. They don't have a rigid schedule that they stick to.
Yeah, for sure. And moving on, I'd love to ask you about naps and napping. So is this something that you should incorporate into your daily routine if you're getting good sleep, or is having a nap an indication of not having quality sleep?
I love this topic because I am a napper. I'm pro nap. and a lot of people are surprised by that. But they can be so helpful. I mean, people work funny hours. A lot of people, increasingly, there are people around the world working shifts and working. I work in multiple time zones. So sometimes you can't sleep at the time that your body needs to sleep at. So scheduling naps can be really helpful to make sure that you're getting the amount of sleep that you need. If you're planning them ahead and you're napping as regularly as you can, then the research says that that's probably the best thing that you can do to make sure that you're still getting enough quality sleep. However, if you're using naps as a way to make up for being tired, that's when you know that there's something wrong. It shouldn't be some way of trying to catch up on sleep that you've missed. If you're waking up tired after giving yourself the opportunity to sleep for a full night, you're still so tired that you feel like you need to have a nap during the day, then something's wrong there. And it might be that your sleep's not good quality, but it might be other things. You might have some kind of illness, or it could be to do with your physical or mental health. So there's other things to explore. But you shouldn't really get to the point where you're so tired that you need to nap. It should feel like a treat. Or something that you've planned in. And the way to do it well is as much as possible, if you're going to nap early in the day. Because like I said earlier about the sleep drive, it's a bit like your appetite for food. When you wake up in the morning, your appetite for sleep, you have no appetite for sleep because you've just had loads of sleep. Your appetite for sleep builds throughout the day. If you have a nap just before bedtime, or like, I don't know, 6 o'clock in the evening, it's a bit like eating a Mars bar before dinner. You're just not going to enjoy your dinner the same way. It's not going to satisfy you as much. So if you're going to nap earlier in the day, because it will have less impact on your night sleep. Also keeping them short. So if your naps are around 30 minutes long, then that's ideal. Because there's a lot of research that says naps can really boost your energy, your problem-solving abilities, all of those things that we were talking about before that can be problematic if you're sleep-deprived. So actually a short nap can really boost a lot of those functions that are depleted when you're tired. But if you nap for too long, you start getting into those deeper stages of sleep and you experience what we call sleep inertia. That's when you wake up feeling really groggy. So all of those benefits that you could have had from the nap, you've wasted those. So keeping your naps short, keeping them as early in the day as you can, is the most effective. That's pro napping. They're the standards to stick to.
Yeah, I love that you're pro nap because I feel like naps can be so good and such a treat as well. And there are some people who say you shouldn't nap because if you nap, that's an indication that you're just not getting enough sleep. But I feel like sometimes when you have that nap earlier on in the day, you feel like you can go for a bit longer, or you feel like we're more energized to take on the rest of the day before your proper bedtime as well.
Yeah, napping smart is what it's all about. When I was flying back into New Zealand, I came from Singapore and I had flights that were at horrible times because I booked them really late. So I couldn't get the ones I would have liked. And so I rescheduled my sleep around that. So I napped before getting on the plane because I knew I wouldn't sleep on the plane. So I was a little bit less sleep deprived when I arrived in New Zealand. So be clever about it. Use them.
Yeah, for sure. I love that. Be clever about it. I feel like that's a good mantra to have. Perfect. Well, I think we can jump into our practices and habits experiment debrief section. So here, I'm just going to ask you about some more personal practices that you use to help cultivate better sleep. So is there a practice that you specifically use to achieve better sleep productivity?
Yeah, my favorite, and this is one of my top recommendations for everyone I work with, is going outside in the morning. It's very simple. There are loads of reasons why this helps with your sleep. The sunlight impacts your circadian rhythm in a way that unnatural light does not. So you could sit in a really bright office and it will have almost no impact. Whereas going out into daylight, even on a cloudy day, really helps to set your circadian rhythm. And that is, it's increasing your alertness in the morning, which helps you to feel ready for the day ahead. It helps to set off your sleep drive, so that you start to feel tired at the right time later on as well, because our bodies are so aligned with the sun, and we close them off all the time. So we're missing out on a lot of those cues in our natural environment that really help our sleep. It's so simple, but we live lifestyles now that mean that we're not exposed to these things very much anymore. So the sun helps to dictate when we are sleepy and when we're more wakeful, which feels kind of obvious, but we don't maximize it. So it's such a simple thing that you can do. It also helps set those rhythms, like we were talking about melatonin. There's a lot of other neurochemical reactions that are going on in your body throughout your 24-hour circadian cycle. And the sun helps set those things off. So if you're struggling with sleep, one of the first things you should do is try and build in more daylight during your mornings, ideally. As with all of my advice, I understand that I have a very flexible lifestyle and I go for a 30-minute walk most mornings. I understand that's not possible for everyone. I'm lucky. that has such a huge positive impact on my sleep. But a lot of people just can't factor that into their days. So if you can't do that, drink your coffee sat next to a window when you wake up in the morning, or just go and stand outside for 5 minutes. You don't have to walk for 20. If you're waking up in the dark, like a lot of people around the world do, when it gets light, just try and step outside for a few minutes and like have your morning tea break outdoors or near a window or a balcony. So finding ways to, again, factor that in a way that you can achieve it consistently is what's key. Plus, you know, going out for walks, starting the day with a little bit of exercise is just so good for the body and soul, I think. Now that I'm back in Wellington, where there's so much beautiful greenery, going out for my morning walks is just wonderful. Loads of birdsong everywhere and going out into the native bush. And it's doing a lot of good things for my sleep.
Yeah, for sure. I feel like going outside is so underrated and people don't appreciate it enough. And it's so accessible as well. Like all you have to do is walk outside or go into your backyard or something like that. I'm super curious, what do you think would happen if you stayed indoors all day and you stayed in a very dark sort of environment? How would that sort of impact your sleep?
There's been interesting experiments done where people have been left in caves astronauts, for example. They also have weird daylight hours, or people who live at really extreme places on the globe where sometimes it's winter for 6 months. So we actually have research around this. And there's a lot of things that start to just get a bit messed up when we don't have that rhythm. Our circadian rhythm is actually something that is internal and biological. So most of us, our circadian rhythm is between 24 and 26 hours long, 23, 26. So it's not actually set to the 24-hour cycle. What keeps us to a 24-hour cycle is daylight and other social cues. So when you take away daylight, which is the main thing that sets our circadian rhythm, you notice that people start to deviate from a 24-hour cycle. So they start to sleep at weird times, start to eat at weird times. They kind of would be roughly in sync with what's going on for them internally, rather than responding to their cues in the environment. But if people are without daylight for a long time, a lot of unhealthy stuff starts to happen. You see in shift workers, for example, who if they have really inconsistent shifts and they're not getting daylight at regular times, there's a lot of implications in terms of physical and mental health. Lots of things can start to deteriorate. I try not to focus on that too much, because people can get quite hung up on this as well. Poor sleepers, or say shift workers who really struggle to get the daylight, can get quite freaked out about this stuff. And that has a negative impact on their sleep as well. So actually, it's probably more helpful just to focus on how do I achieve that in the most manageable way for me?
Yeah, for sure. And how do you feel like incorporating, this morning, dose of daylight into your daily routine has impacted your productivity?
So much. I mean, aside from what I talked about there with the physiological aspects of it, it's also it's a really lovely time for me. It's quite a reflective time. I do a lot of thinking when I'm walking. Sometimes I'm listening to a podcast or some music, but often it's when I'm thinking about the day I have ahead, what plans I have for the week. I think it's a time that really helps me to be creative, because it's quite focused in some ways. I'm not sat at my desk. There's something about movement for me that is very helpful in terms of the thinking and creativity as well. So just being out walking in the daylight with no other pressures, knowing that you're going to be out for, say, 30 minutes or whatever, and just having that time to let your brain kind of free run and see where it takes you. I usually come back, and then I come back home and I'll have a cup of coffee and have my breakfast, and I've already got some sense of what I want my day to look like. I've set some intentions for the day. I'm quite clear about what goals I want to achieve. I'm really ready to go then, rather than what I have done previously: get up as late as possible, just rush through your morning routine, start work. So trying to get as much sleep as possible by lying in as late as you can. But as soon as I started walking in the mornings instead, I realized that actually the knock-on effect for my day ahead was huge, because my energy levels were increased, but also because I came at it with a different attitude.
Yeah, definitely. And I feel like doing things in the morning in a more sort of spaced out way, without feeling like you have to cram everything in before work or whatever you have, is really satisfying. And I feel like when I get to do those productive things in the morning, I feel a lot better about the day ahead. And I don't feel like this sense of dread, like, oh, I've got so much to do, I haven't had enough time to do anything. So I feel like that's a really good one.
Yeah, it can feel a bit counterintuitive when you feel like you're not getting enough sleep, or you're not getting good enough sleep. The tendency is to try and get more sleep, but actually by focusing on things like having a morning walk and setting your day up well, you are going to get better sleep.
Yeah, amazing. Well, thank you so much for sharing that with us. I'd love to get into our last section now, which is our open mic. And I know you have something exciting to talk to us about, which is super fun. So I'll hand it over to you now.
Yeah, I don't even know what to say about it, really. But one of my main passions is dancing. I could talk about this for a long time. So please feel free to jump in and direct or stop me. I do think this relates to sleep as well. Dancing's been a part of my life since as long as I can remember. I've been dancing. I've been going to classes and getting as involved as I can in dance communities. Apart from it being very good for your physical health, most of my enduring friendships have come through dance. there's such a great sense of community that you get from being part of dance groups. I've rejoined my dance group since getting back to Wellington, having left them a few years ago, and it's just wonderful That kind of sense of camaraderie. Sometimes you're working towards a performance together, so you've got the challenges, the sense of achievement. But it's so good in terms of your sleep and your physical and mental health. You're staying active and doing something regular like that, and also something sociable. These things feed into all sorts of positive physical and mental health outcomes. So I should get into some specifics, shouldn't I, just to give you a sense of what that means for me. One of my passions when it comes to dancing is ballet. And it's quite niche, I guess. But I go to ballet classes when I'm in Singapore, and I love them so much. I think some people are maybe put off by the idea that it is quite a traditional dance form and probably has some quite kind of rigid expectations about what you're meant to look like and the person you're meant to be. But I find that actually dance classes usually aren't like that. They're usually just full of people who love to move to music. And they're often really eclectic and really inclusive. And I love that about it. So I love to move to music, but I also love the sense of community that you get, the different kinds of people that you meet with, all with a shared passion. People joke that my friends are pretty much all either dancers or psychologists or both. A lot of my friends are actually both. Psychologists do like to dance. So yeah.
I feel like that's so fun. Would you recommend getting into dance for someone who's curious or never danced before?
Yeah, absolutely. I know it can be really daunting, and I'm always so impressed, because as someone who's always danced, I go to a dance class and I have no shame. I'll stand at the front, I have no idea what I'm doing. I'll figure I'll probably pick it up, and I don't really care. But it can feel so difficult for people who are completely new to it. And I have so much admiration for people who pick these things up as adults and kind of embrace that challenge. So I think if you want to try a new dance class, like, go find some recommendations from people who you know who might be interested, but go to it with that knowledge that the people in the class are probably really impressed that you've shown up and are probably really glad to see you. Most dance classes I've been to have been so welcoming, because they know that you're there for the same reason as them. So give it a go.
Yeah, exactly. I often find that it's really scary when you decide to do something, and when you actually go to do it, like, just getting there is the hardest part. But then at the end of it, you realize that it was worth going through that scary bit, because you've done the dance class or whatever you're doing, and it was actually a lot better than you expected.
Yeah. And even if you don't like that style, there's so many different styles of dance that you can do. So just have a go. A lot of dance classes you can just join for one or two lessons to try it out, you know, and get a sense of it. I'm terrible for this. Ballet is enduring for me, but I will try any kind of dance that comes my way. I go to all the beginner classes in all the different styles of dance you can imagine. So I try everything a couple of times, and then some of those things I stick to. So I'm very experienced at going to new classes, and I found them almost always to be really welcoming and fun experiences, even if it doesn't end up being for you. Go and give it a go, try something new. So it's so good for our brains to just try something different, and that sense of achievement you get having set a goal for yourself and tried something that's a bit outside your comfort zone. It's good in so many ways.
Yeah, definitely. Are there a few styles of dance that you would recommend, or some that you've particularly enjoyed?
Ballet is my absolute passion when it comes to dance. But because my lifestyle is mostly nomadic now, it's quite hard to get to find ballet classes that suit me. So I've been on a mission to try and find dance styles that are easier to pick up as someone who travels a lot. So if any of your listeners are thinking about this, one of the things I'd be looking into is be trying to make my decision on what to try next based on things like what's a really common form of dance across the world, so that when I go to Costa Rica, I can join the dance parties in Costa Rica. What do I need to know some basic moves in so that I can join dance wherever I am in the world? Because as I've traveled over the last few years, I've seen so many opportunities to dance, and have been restricted at being able to join in because I don't feel like I know any of the right moves. And actually, if you learn some of the kind of key partner dance styles, I guess like salsa, samba. I'm very interested in kazumba at the moment. I think that's what I'm going to try next. But a lot of those kinds of styles are very friendly. There's a lot of social dances you can join in with. So you only really need to know a few basic moves and then you can join the parties.
I love that. Thank you so much. That was such an interesting open mic. I love when we get to talk about random little topics that don't really have to do with what we're talking about. But that was so fun. So thank you so much for sharing that with us.
I love talking about dancing. So thank you.
No worries. Well, that also brings us to the end of today's episode. But thank you so much for coming on the show today and sharing your insights and your insights on dance as well. It was really great to hear from you.
Thank you.
Perfect. Well, for those of us listening who want to find out a bit more about you or get some further resources, where can we go?
I have a website, thefamilysleepconsultant.com. I also, and I update, there's a resources section on there. So there's information about how I work, but I also am adding new resources all the time. So there's like sleep diaries and checklists that you can do and stuff like that, things I've written. I'm also on quite a lot of social media because I find it's a great way to just tell people stuff that I find interesting about sleep. So you can find me on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn. And I post similar things on all of those platforms. So go for your preferred one. Start following me. I'm often just reading quite random articles about sleep and then posting my thoughts about them online. So it's quite eclectic, but I love those platforms as an opportunity to just engage with people in discussions about sleep. So yeah, find me on there. I'm going to be running quite a lot of workshops in 2024, and most of those are going to be online in different parts of the world. So you can check that out on my website. There's a link to a mailing list that you can sign up to on there as well, if you're interested in hearing more about them when I announce the dates.
Beautiful. Well, thank you for that. If you missed any of that, don't worry. We've got Nicola's details down in the description below. But to everyone listening, thanks so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next time. You have been listening to Work in Progress, the Personal Productivity Science Insights podcast produced by the Life Management Science Labs. Listen to episodes from LMSL's 10 Life Management Perspectives on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or other podcasting apps on your smartphone. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider rating our show, sharing it, and subscribing to our channel, as it helps other people find it and us grow to bring you more quality resources. More of our work can be found on our website, pp.lmsl.net, where you can join our movement. I'm Joanna. Thanks for tuning in.